Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Evident Footprints. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and we're going to do this thing together tonight. And before we get into anything heavy, I want to let you know that it's okay to call in, especially if most likely you're listening on the Internet, so you're at a computer. I'm going to refrain from reading the numbers off, and I'm going to ask anyone who would like to call in, please do. We got plenty to talk about, and we have to be concerned about what's going on in the world in the last couple of days, particularly over the weekend, and now that we're all the way up to February the 12th on the East Coast, still February 11th on the West Coast, we are at some very critical times in our nation's history and in the world's history. And I'll expound on that in a moment. But by all means, feel free to call into the show. I will be taking calls. I want your comments. I want your input on what I'm going to be talking about, as well as anything else that's on your mind. Could be about the vote fraud around the country. Definitely, we can talk about that as well. I want to give a quick shout out to some dear friends around the country. And if I don't mention your name, it's not that I don't remember you. It's that I'm pulling these off the top of my head, and the list is growing and growing and growing. So I want to shout out to a couple of people that I have failed to recognize throughout the past few weeks. Number one, Reverend Roxy Hampton, who had me on her show for a little bit this last night. In fact, I just kind of called in to back up what she was saying, and we ended up talking about my show and my take on things, and I guess that's what these shows are all about anyway. But she has been helping Evident Footprints, and I'm grateful for that. And I want to encourage you to listen to her show, which comes on several, I think it's a couple of times a week. I know she subs for Dr. Len Horowitz, who I also want to say hello to. But the show is called Mission Possible. And she was on the money last night, let me tell you. She was hitting the nail on the head, hitting bullseyes with every word that came out of her mouth. And I felt really moved to call and support what she was saying. Not that she needed my support, but like maybe it would please her to know somebody out there was actually agreeing with what she was saying. Also, I'd like to say hi to Rick in Denver, Michael in New York, John in Southern California. Actually, he's right up the street from BBS Radio, and he's a regular listener. Marianne in Arkansas, Peter and Maria all the way down in the Orlando, Florida area. And let's see, we got Karen, Bob, and Bill, David, Zachariah, Crenshaw, Sheila, and the General, and Kastara in the Phoenix. Actually, I guess she's closer to Prescott. Kastara, hello, and I may think of some more people before the show's over tonight. So nice to have all of you supporting the show and writing or calling and giving me encouragement and support. Okay, what's this great news that we have? Well, you've heard me on various shows talking about the the missing money, the embezzlement of trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars beyond your wildest imagination. One could not write a movie script and have it be believable, and yet this is going on in real time now all over the world. And it's because of a very patriotic act that a U.S. Treasury agent performed in the 1980s and the early 1990s before he was falsely incarcerated, so that the powers that be, and we're speaking about three top-level administrations. We're talking about presidents, vice presidents, Treasury agents, people that work for the Federal Reserve, conspiring together, and this is not theory, this is documented, conspiring to raid the bank accounts of $27.5 trillion that Ambassador, now going by the name Lee Emil Wanta, his birth name, gathered under President Reagan's Executive Order 12333, which in 1981 gave Treasury agents and other employees who worked overseas for intelligence agencies to conduct business, to deposit the funds from the business, profits in other words, into special bank accounts that eventually would be repatriated into the U.S. Treasury. Short of the $27.5 trillion, George H.W. Bush, then Bill Clinton, and now George W. Bush and their administrations, and I do mean people in their cabinet, with the knowledge and even complicity of various senators and congressmen, have been stealing this money, hypothecating, and basically creating Ponzi schemes. And if you're not familiar with Ponzi schemes, just Google the name Charles Ponzi, and you'll come up with quite a treasure trove of information about all the, let's say, pyramid-type schemes that he worked out, although these primarily benefited himself. One of the biggest Ponzi schemes in history, and this occurred back in the early 1920s, Ponzi taking advantage of the Postal Service's willingness to afford stamps to people who lived out of the country. In other words, if you wanted to mail a letter to someone overseas and you didn't have the money, or you wanted someone in your family, a relative or a friend that you wanted to communicate with, that couldn't afford stamps, you could buy
Hello,
into
sweet
these
spirit.
Stamp
this is Kenny
programs
Kingston.
And make a lot of money, according to Mr. Ponzi. And what Mr. Ponzi did was made a lot of money, and everyone else lost. And this is kind of what they're doing with the banks right now. You're hearing it blamed on the housing market. You're hearing it blamed on a young French stockbroker that played in vanilla futures and lost some $7 billion. In actuality, those funds were tied into $700 billion, and a myriad of other stockbrokers and banks were involved in this. And they're blaming it on one young man who is from France and who has become the Lee Harvey Oswald of this bank corruption. Now, the banks have been playing ping-pong ball with the money. And if you understand that with the computers, they can move money in a nanosecond all around the planet, and to the extent to where if you don't have the correct computers and the correct software, you can't track the money. We know they're using the Promise software. This was software developed by Bill Hamilton's Inslaw Company in Washington, D.C., and it's called Promise, P-R-O-M-I-S. And the Promise software has been used for several reasons. Number one, it was developed for the Justice Department so that they could keep good records on bankruptcy cases. But what they used it for was money laundering. And we know we have corrupt courts around the country, and this is the focal point of how they are manipulating the funds is using this Promise software. The software has a command line structure of some 700,000 different commands. So it can track money very well. It can track addresses and names, and it can duplicate and triplicate and quadruple the data so that it becomes very difficult for someone to follow where this money is going. Now, the original $27.5 trillion that Leo Wanta raised was through the destabilization of the Russian rubles. He pulls at discounts, and then he gave the rubles back to people who were interested in buying them. He bought them anywhere from 18 to 23 cents per ruble, even though on the open market they were trading at $1.20. Now, he would even sell these to the Russian agents, which implied that the Russians were probably involved in this, and that there may have been a retro takedown of the world economy, if you want to call it that. In other words, the Soviet Union would go down, it would dissolve, the currency would be devalued, but then they would come back and come back with a vengeance, which is now what is going on. It's taken some 20 years or so for this actually to develop. But they did this by incarcerating Leo Wanta, first arresting him when he was supposed to arrest international fugitive Mark Rich, who got the 11th hour pardon from Bill Clinton, by the way. Wanta was arrested, put in a gulag in Switzerland for 134 days. Then he was extradited in shackles and chains, and we're talking about where they put the big ring around your neck, and they have your neck and your feet and your hands all tied together. They marched him into court, into federal court, and he spent about 15 minutes there, and the judge released him, recognizing his diplomatic status. He had $18 billion in high-value treasury notes in a briefcase, which really belonged to the government of Somalia. They stole that money. They actually took him to Wisconsin. That's where the theft occurred, and charged him with 15-cent taxes that supposedly went back to somewhere around 1984. He hadn't been in the country for a number of years, and he was exempt from taxes, actually. But even though he was working for the government and had met his obligations, they charged him $14,129 on two separate occasions, and then a third time. Now, the third time they charged him was over $30,000, and he was already incarcerated. He had been illegally thrown in jail. He had been railroaded and maligned by the FBI and by the Wisconsin authorities, who at the time were under the governorship of Tommy Donna Shalala, who was, I believe, the provost of the University of Wisconsin, was given a job in Washington, D.C. as the Secretary of Health and Human Services for her role in assisting Governor Thompson and putting Wanta behind bars and getting the $18 billion probably to Clinton. It's most likely that the Clintons got the money, or they divvied it up with their cohorts. Nonetheless, Wanta survived numerous attempts on his life in prison, eventually was put under house arrest and released in 2005. Now, at the time he was released, the CIA had been telling the world that he was dead, and they had begun raiding the accounts, the offshore accounts. George Bush had begun trying to do that as far back as 1989, was told no, the money belongs to the American people. He had made a trip to Hong Kong to attempt to seize the money from Wanta and his business partner, who was the head of Chinese intelligence at the time, Howie Kwan Kuk. Now, Howie Kwankuk died 10 days after Bush visited, and he died of poisoning after having eaten in a certain restaurant. So with the connection Bush had from days past going back even to the time that Richard Nixon was president, when they had made him an 11-month embassy staffer, we'll say. He wasn't an ambassador at the time. He most likely had intelligence connections, and he had worked in the CIA despite his claims that he didn't remember where he was, even the President Kennedy was assassinated, when anyone who was alive remembers where they were. He's the only one that can't remember. And he didn't get the money from Wanta. Wanta did a pretty good job for a few years of laying low and keeping it out of the reach of these would-be thieves. Well, when they got him in behind bars, they were able to track down some of the accounts, and they started hypothecating the money. This is the reason we are in the financial straits we're in, because there are hedge funds and derivative funds based upon this money that they claim they have in their possession, when in reality they don't. So hypothecation of the funds is merely, it would be as if you went out and tried to get a house loan or a car loan based on the money that I have in my bank account. And it's not your money, and yet you're acting as though you are, and you may even get a bank to participate in that because it generates business for them. So this is what they've done. This is why the economy is crashing, because trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions. I could go on the rest of the show saying the word trillions every second, and I would not have enough time to accumulate all the trillions of dollars that have been stolen. Now, the Federal Reserve is upside down, and that would be business lingo for being in the red, by the tune of some 1.4 to 1.5 quadrillion dollars. That's a quadrillion. 1.4 to 1.5 quadrillion dollars. They are in the red. The Federal Reserve, for all intents and purposes, in the United States is bankrupt. Now, what impact does this have on the rest of the world? Well, the world already, as of last October, September, October, stopped paying for oil in dollars. Dollars had been the medium of exchange worldwide. They stopped paying. China was one of the first. In fact, prior to them stopping payment in oil, and in the beginning they paid, and they still may be, they were paying in British pound sterling. So our dollar was taking hits there. And you can go back to last October or last September and see that the dollar was falling. It's been falling for a number of years. It's been falling ever since 9/11, in fact. But more specifically, more recently, it's been crashing ever since September and early October. During that time, there was a period of 32 days where the CHIPS accounts, which CHIPS stands for Clearinghouse Interbank Payment System, and this is the money that the Chinese put up to guarantee loans. Let's say the U.S. needs to borrow $100 million or $1 billion or $100 billion for some project. The Chinese put up the money. The Chinese get the interest on that money they put up. And these CHIPS accounts totaled $32 trillion. That's with a T. So what they did, because Wanta, who had made a settlement, by the way, I skipped this part, but after his $30,000 fine was paid to get him out of house arrest 5 years earlier, in other words, in May of 2005, he was released from house arrest. via a note that he sent to Bill Clinton regarding his incarceration and regarding some certain funds that he knew about that the Clintons had taken. He was released, and he filed suit in federal court in Richmond, Virginia, as the holder of these funds, the true holder of the funds which belonged to his company, Ameritrust Group, Inc. Now, what Wanta did is sued and won. He was designated the trustor. The money had been remitted from the Chinese to the tune of $4.5 trillion. Now, that's a lot of money for anybody. If we had $1.575 trillion in our treasury, it would earn $200 billion, with a B, $200 billion a day. That would have been the tax that Wanta would have paid, $1.575 trillion, on his $4.5 trillion settlement, keeping in mind that he had actually raised $27.5 trillion, which he intended to put in the U.S. Treasury. They had gotten their hands on some of it, and there were bank records, and I've seen many of these. You would see $2 billion or $500 billion or $500 million or $20 billion. You would see all these huge amounts of money being shifted from one bank to another, and you'd see the name. Once there was $1 billion into the private account of a Jorge Bush. Jorge, of course, is Spanish for George. And it would just make you incensed to see the amount of money that these people were stealing. Now, Wanta documented much of this, and he was able, even when he was in prison, he had means through which people could document what was going on. And it all began with a $250 million withdrawal from that money that Bill Clinton ordered Wanta to give to Vince Foster. Several days after Vince Foster returned to the United States with this $250 million, which was given to Hillary Clinton's Children's Defense Fund, which was had nothing to do with children and everything to do with the secret Navy SEAL project, which was probably drug dealing and maybe some arms shipments. Foster was killed. Wanta got the news of that while he was in the Swiss jail. So, like many other people that the Clintons dealt with, Foster was disposed of. And his cover-up was guaranteed. The special prosecutor, Kenneth Starr, was the attorney for the Children's Defense Fund. Do you think that man was going to find the killers of Vince Foster? Even though they had satellite phones, they know that he was murdered in a parking lot close to the White House, then driven to Fort Marcy Park and put in a car, and holding with the wrong hand, you know, the usual blunders that these people make were all evident, yet Foster covered the whole thing, or Starr covered the Foster murder up completely. The whole investigation was a sham. Now, there is plenty more evidence like that to back up what's been going on, but I thought I would bring the listeners up to date regarding what is going on today, because this settlement was negotiated in court on early December. I think it was December 6th of 2005. I know it was around the first week of December in 2005. And the payments were supposed to begin by June of 2006, although they should have been there right at that time. He should have just demanded the payment. But the judge allowed some 6 months for these payments to be delayed. Payments never came. 2006 came and went. 2007 came and went. Numerous promises. And the promises were not just to Leo Wanta. They were to the rest of the world, because there were eight countries that were due a minimum of $5 billion each for participating in the scheme to bring the ruble down. And Vladimir Putin himself was promised $30 billion for allowing this to take place. In fact, Leo Wanta had an office in Moscow. Now, how could you take down the Soviet ruble or the Russian ruble? How could you take it down if when you had an office in the town and you promised to give the former head of the KGB $30 billion? Well, see, everybody has a price. That's how he did it. Wanta was able to guarantee participation. Some would call that bribery. Most likely it was, because that money actually belonged to the American people at some point. And via President Reagan's executive order, 12333, that order said that the money was for the use of the agent, but that ultimately it had to be repatriated into the U.S. Treasury. Not into their private bank accounts, not into overseas accounts, not into their pockets, and not into any special government program. It was for the benefit of the people and on the books. Now, Wanta's settlement was a Treasury direct settlement, which meant that there was no option of the funds, there was no shenanigans to be played. But that's exactly what they did. It went from Bank of America to Wachovia Bank, then back to Bank of America. Then it ended up with Goldman Sachs for a long time. Then interestingly, it seems like every World Bank president and every U.S. Treasury secretary has worked for Goldman Sachs. So it tells you that they have strong financial ties with the stock exchange, and there's got to be corruption going on there. In fact, there is. We've had the Fed recently, in the past few months, propping up the margin calls of the various companies that are about to go under, and they've been giving them the money. And they're going to make us pay that money back, or they think they're going to make us pay that money back. Now, that's the gist of what's going on, except for the fact that these other countries that I mentioned, some of them are Japan, China, Russia, the Netherlands, France, Germany, England, Mexico is even involved in this, and I think Italy, they're all getting a piece of this this money for their participation. As I mentioned, at least $5 billion each. At one point, Yitzhak Rabin was in line to get $5 billion, and after Wanta was taken down, Rabin was assassinated. Do you think there's a connection there? Oh yes. For $5 billion, you better believe it. Now, the people have been waiting for this money, and this has been playing out, and you say to yourself, but I haven't heard a lick about this on the mainstream media. Well, I wonder why. I wonder why. If those of you who are old enough to remember, there were many things about the Vietnam War we didn't hear, or many things about the Korean War that we didn't hear. And some who are even older, there are many things that we didn't hear about World War II. In fact, we never heard that the United States knew that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor. Many of us didn't know that the Hilo Herald had published articles as early as a week or two before Pearl Harbor actually occurred, but even the day before Pearl Harbor, which was December 7th, 1941, on December 6th of 1941, the Hilo Herald had on the front page, Pearl Harbor may be attacked. Now, how is it that a newspaper can know that, but our military can't stop that? Well, war is a money-making venture for all sides. And the loss of life is both to the citizens of the country as well as the armies on all sides. And as long as these people are making the kind of money they make when they have a war going on, they they're going to keep the wars going. Imagine how much they'll make if they keep this Iraq war going for 100 years, like they say they're going to keep it going. Where do they get off being psychic that they can predict that a war is going to last 100 years? I mean, it's their wish to have 100 years of war so they can murder everybody on the planet and rob and steal everything they own. That's the reality. That's what these people are doing. Now, getting to the point, there have been a series of articles, and you've heard me on this show before refer to an author, an investigative journalist, and a financial analyst from Great Britain. And his name is Christopher Story. He runs a company and a website. He has a publishing company, and he writes many intelligence books. And one of the books that he writes, which is a subscription sort of quarterly magazine, which is called International Currency Review, predicts trends that are happening in the economy so that people can make sound investments. At one point, Mr. Story had been an advisor to Margaret Thatcher. And, of course, those of you who know your history a little bit, Margaret Thatcher was the Prime Minister of England before Tony Blair took office. Now, I think she was cut from a different cloth than Blair. Blair has been playing this embezzlement scheme along with the Bush and the Clintons, Bush family and the Clintons, and it's known that he's involved in it. There was at one point a warrant for his arrest, and he was ushered out of the country quickly. And if I remember correctly, the date that happened was 2005 of, or no, I'll say 2006. It was May the 25th of 2006. We had a shootout in the Rayburn office building. Of course, that hit the news for a couple of minutes. All of maybe an hour. It was on CNN, Fox, MSNBC, and it occurred late morning. There was a shootout between U.S. and French intelligence agents on one side and British and Israeli intelligence agents on the other side. Now, they had a plan that they were going to blow up the train service, and we're talking about the passenger train service, basically from New York all the way down to Washington. They were going to try to take those out, and there were going to be numerous disasters. And my understanding is that they had some books, they had materials, and that might have been the schedules. It could have been the computer codes that possibly run these trains. I don't know how sophisticated they are, but they had some data. At least they knew where this was going to occur. And to thwart it, they cut the power in New York, and they cut it in Quebec, Canada. Now, there was a power outage on that day, and everyone is aware of that. But no one knew why there was a power outage. And, of course, you know, you never get the truth. You're going to get the excuse. They're going to tell you, well, national security. And that may have been national security, but what no one knew was that the shootout between these agents was happening in the Rayburn office building parking garage. Now, many of the senators use that building for their office space, and there was a woman screaming in the hall. They were reporting on CNN, and that there was a man running around the gymnasium, and he had a gun. Well, they determined that that was the Israeli agent, and the police came, and they put tape around the scene, and all the media had their cameras out there, and the shooting went on for some time. Now, the report was that there was a construction accident that occurred in the garage. Well, quite impossible because there was no construction going on. What it was a shootout, and they had fired at least 1,000 rounds and hit many if not all of the cars. And we're talking about windshields and door panels and fenders and hoods and roofs and trunks and probably some flat tires. They just tore the place up. Then the word came out a few days later that on some internet broadcast that they had flown in a number of auto mechanics and treated them to hotels and dalliances with women and food and wine. They were wined and dined. What I heard was they were paid triple the going rate, and they worked over the weekend to fix all these cars. Now, seems like it would be difficult to do, but what we were told was that the people were not allowed to drive their cars home. They weren't even allowed to find out what was going on. They had to find some other means to make their way home. That had happened on a Friday, if I remember correctly. It was a Friday. When the sergeant for the Washington, or what you would call the Capitol Police, came on the, and I remember it was a Sergeant Schaefer, Karen Schaefer, came out. And, of course, she had no answers. I can't answer that. I don't have that information. And I think I knew more about it from watching the TV than she did, and she came out to give the press conference. But it was obviously being covered up, swept under the rug. They didn't want anybody to know about it, and we got the gist of what had happened. Now, this would have been another terrorist attack, but it would have been embarrassing for anyone to find out that Israel and England were behind it. And I would venture to guess that because of the embezzlement of these funds and some other things that were occurring, may have had everything to do with the money and really nothing to do with terrorism, but that they were going to force them to cough up this money. Now, still, today, here we are in 2008, February 12th, 2008, and Leo Wanta still hasn't gotten his money. At least it hasn't been reported that he got his money. But what has been reported is that he didn't get his money, and the G8 group of nations had a meeting over the weekend, and they came to an ultimatum. And the ultimatum was covered by Christopher Story on his website, worldreports.org, and I have it on my website, which is directlightproductions.com. And you can go to the news page. By the way, I'm creating a new page, which is probably about 75 to 80% finished, and it's going to be my Wantagate page because I've got such a massive amount of information on that case that I'm actually creating a page just for those articles. And that may get published tonight or definitely by tomorrow. It will be published, and you can read up on Wantagate just by clicking on Wantagate at my site. And regular news items will remain on the news page, but I'm sort of redoing the whole site. So some of it's functional, and I've been putting Christopher Story's articles up for several months on the site, and I'll probably go backtracking and update many of the articles that were published before I actually started publishing on my own website. Now, Christopher Story says that the group of nine, and that's eliminating the U.S. from the group of 10, of course, because they're at fault. And I say they because it's not we, the people, that are doing this. It's these criminals in our government that are doing this. This is organized crime. It's embezzlement, it's theft, it's treason, and it's nothing else. We can't even call this misdemeanors. I mean, I don't know what misdemeanor you could pin on this. This is outright high crime and treason. The group of nine have decided that if Leo Wanta was originally reported by Christopher Story, didn't receive his money by 6 p.m. Monday evening. Okay, that time has already passed. That they would begin an oil embargo against our country, as well as they would cease all international flights arriving in any of those foreign countries, including our military, by the way. And they would stop wire transfers to and from any of the 9 countries, and basically the U.S. banks will be shut down. Now, this is a pretty serious issue because they have forced us into this situation, and I can tell you Christopher Story's not writing this to be a spy novel. This is not a movie script he's writing. And he has been disinformed on a couple of points, or maybe we have been totally disinformed, and he has been absolutely correct on most of the points. He had reported shootings that were reported to him and confirmed by various sources. They could have easily put these people under some pressure to, let's say, disinform him after they had been giving him reliable information. It's unknown whether that occurred. But then the story came out this evening that this had actually occurred, but that it was actually many hours earlier in the day. As a matter of fact, as of 12 p.m., noon, in other words, on Monday, the 11th, they began the oil embargo. 4 Saudi Arabian tankers were ordered back to port. They had left and they were on their way to bring oil to the United States. They were stopped. Our Navy had previously, several days ago, cut 9 underground, 8 to 9 fiber optic underground, we're talking about traversing the ocean, fiber optic cables that interconnect these countries to the internet, including India, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, I believe, the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, and Iran. Tell me that that's not precursory to starting a war. Now, their intention was to try to pass this off as some kind of accident, that maybe an anchor got stuck. Well, boats don't sail and drag their anchors. They lift their anchors. The anchor keeps them from moving. So it would have been very unlikely that that they would have actually cut those cables. And they know where the cables are. In fact, that's how they cut them, is they went down there and cut them. They know where they are. So they put us in this embarrassing situation, and then they turn around, and now they have basically created a stalemate. Now, having been given this information, this ultimatum by the G9, and again, I'm leaving the United States out of the 10th position, Japan is one of these countries that was today to announce to the world what's going on. Now, I haven't heard that announcement. I don't know if anyone has. But the announcement that our government has been basically embezzling trillions of dollars was to come out, and the gravity of what this is doing to the world's finances. Also, I have to backtrack. This is around the time of early spring before the Kentucky Derby last year. And some of you may remember that the Queen of England came to the United States and went to the Kentucky Derby. But before she did that, she went to Washington to ask for her stolen gold. You see, they had over a 2-day period. And as I remember, this was a weekend of March 29th and March 30th. For 2 days, for an eight-hour period, they had disabled the banks in England, particularly the Bank of England, which they claimed they were installing new software to help communicate between Brussels and London, London and New York, and New York and Brussels. They were putting new software in, and so they needed this software and these computers to be shut down so that they could conduct such a transaction. Now, yes, that was the 30th, which is a Friday. I'm going to say it's the 30th and the 31st of March when this occurred, over an eight-hour period. So the people who had bank accounts in England couldn't get their money in or out of account. And I'm sure some people went to the bank needing money, maybe to buy groceries or to make some payment, possibly rent. It was the end of the month. And virtually anybody that had an account couldn't use it. What they did is they stole 4.594 trillion dollars worth of the Queen's gold. We're talking 220,000 tons of gold had been stolen from the Bank of England. They got a couple of bank personnel to do the job with them, and that disappeared. Now, where did it go? Well, it could have gone to Goldman Sachs. It could have gone to, no pun intended, by the way. But eventually, the Queen got the money back, and it was pretty recently that she got it back, within the last couple of months. But for the longest time, it almost resulted in a world war. In fact, it was considered an act of war by certain people in England. Now, you didn't hear a lick of that in the news. Christopher Story reported it. I reported it on my Evident Footprint show. I wrote about it. I was interviewed on many other networks as a guest, and I relayed the story to anybody I could. And we're watching the dollar fall. We're watching it fall and fall and fall, and the stock market is being propped up with artificial capital created out of thin air by the Federal Reserve. They give this money to the SEC, and they're saving these firms from total collapse because they can't make their margin calls. And that's a bill they're going to put on our heads. I don't know who keeps the tally, but all of these transactions that are going on are off the books. And we are in breach of the Basel II agreement, which I think was supposed to start December 10th. We were supposed to be on the books with our finances, and this corruption is going on off the books. So this is not only in violation of American laws and our Constitution, this is in violation of international banking laws, international monetary laws, that all transactions from now on have to be on the books. And it's because of this corruption that agreement was initiated in the first place. Well, now it turned out that Christopher Story had reported this deadline was 6 this evening, when in reality it was 12 noon, our time. So it's in effect. There's an oil embargo in effect, and you will begin seeing this in your bank. If not today, definitely by Wednesday, sometime on Wednesday. How the media is going to handle this is a big, big question, because they have not reported a word about any of this. They've been alerted. I've emailed them. Christopher Story has sent thousands and thousands of emails out to the mainstream media. And we're talking radio, television, newspapers, magazines, you name it. And there's not a lick reported. And we talk about it on the internet, and you can find it on the internet. Not just my website. And we even have some articles on the BBS site. This is well known that this is going on amongst the people that are awake and are concerned about the corruption that we're undergoing and the violations to our constitutional rights. Now, what's going to happen from this? Well, you're going to see some banks go under. Goldman Sachs should have gone under already, other than the fact that they made themselves fat off of illegally holding these funds and getting paid the daily interest. If you can imagine what $1.575 trillion earns in the Treasury just sitting there, $200 billion a day, it doesn't take too long until there's another $1 trillion there, and then it doesn't take too long until there's tens of trillions of dollars there. In a very short amount of time, we could be the richest country on the earth. Right now, we are one of the poorest countries on the earth, not to mention that we have no moral stock and no moral worth in the eyes of these other countries. Now, Russia, China, Japan, Germany, the Netherlands, France, England, Italy, Mexico, and I don't even know if Israel's involved right now, but they shouldn't be because they're involved in the money laundering to the tune of some $44 to $47 trillion. These people are insane, what is going on, and they're just getting away with it because people don't hear it in the mainstream media, and if it's not in the mainstream media, it can't be true. Just can't be true. I'm sure all of you listeners know something that's happened that you haven't seen on the mainstream media. And because it wasn't on the media, it didn't mean it didn't happen. After all, you saw it, or it was in your experience. The media is a propaganda tool of this government and has been for over 100 years. It was over 100 years that they bought up all the newspapers, and since the invention of television, they ran that as a mind control, as a brainwashing tool, and they're still running it as that. So you're not going to hear this from the media, but you need to take action, because if you go to your bank in the day or so and they tell you you can't take out any money from your savings or from your checking or what have you, you're going to come back to me and say, why didn't you say anything? And I'm going to say, I told you so. Now, I'm not trying to create a panic. That's not what this is about. This is just being smart. The news will come out. The news, eventually, they're going to have to figure out how they're going to lie about this. This is a difficult one to spin because we've been putting forth the facts for some time. We know what the facts are, and we can compare this. This has parallels to Adolf Hitler's day and the Third Reich. And it falls in line with 9/11 and everything else. In fact, 9/11 was the perfect ruse to divert attention away from what was going on in this case. And they used Britney Spears for the same reason, and they used O.J. Simpson for the same reason, and Anna Nicole Smith and Paris Hilton. They've been parading these what I call the blonde bimbos in front of you so that you become fixated and hypnotized with their nonsense while all this is going on. This is how they finance the space program. This is how they finance the drug industry, is through this money. And then they turn around and take the drug money and they build concentration camps and underground bases with it. Not to mention they build their own little hideaways in Paraguay and Ireland and Israel. Now, half of the people in our government have dual citizenship. They've got passports to Israel or passports to Ireland. And Ireland is a safe haven because there's no extradition treaty between Ireland and the United States. And I find that rather strange, seeing as how they own the what's known as the Northwestern Railroad, which runs through Glacier National Park, which happens to be a hideaway for all the Operation Paperclip criminals. Lake McDonald Lodge and Prince Charles Hotel, to name a couple of them. And this is federal land. These are public parks, and they have private property where they keep Nazi war criminals. And you want to say, oh, this can't be happening. You're running the government, and you got people in office that aren't even Americans. And you wonder why the world is like it is. You think, well, you know, we can't change it. You know, I voted for the best person. But you can't see Israeli companies running the elections, counting the elections, making the computers, making the software, running the whole thing, and then stealing the results and losing it. And they have no accountability. There's no recourse that we have. This insanity has to stop, and people have to start waking up and figuring out what they're going to do about it. I'm at the point, and I'm sure many people who are awake now that are tired of trying to wake up the masses are going to say, you know, I'm going to take care of my rear end, and I'm not really going to worry about these other people. Let them take care of themselves, because I tried waking them up and telling them what was going on. I tried showing people. We're at that stage right now where they're just running rampant. In 2 days, the whole election swings for John McCain's favor. Now, I want to encourage you. We're already out of time tonight, but I want to encourage you to listen in again tomorrow, and especially on Wednesday. I have a surprise guest. You are not going to want to miss Wednesday's show. I'm not even going to tell you who my guest be. It's a big, big surprise. Big surprise. And you are going to be astounded at some of the information that you hear. And I want to thank everyone who listened to all of this rant tonight. Sorry, no one called in. But tomorrow's another night. You've been listening to Evident Footprints. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and we will probably continue with this subject again tomorrow evening. This is important. You're about to witness the financial implosion of the world economy. And we need to take action. I'm at a loss for words right now. Folks, thanks for listening in. I'll be with you tomorrow, same time, same place. Peace, love, and light, and have a good night.